I've often said this for 25 years now, that no one gets more out of these times together than the guy that's ahead all week and sometimes a lot longer than that to sort of process this. And this is one of those examples. The series that we're in, The Journey, is just very attractive to me. Because our lives are a journey, are they not? And, you know, I was talking to a variety of people for a variety of reasons this last week about getting old. And they say, you know, you never really see it coming. It's just like one day you wake up and you go, you know, I'm not what I used to be. I'm old. And I didn't see it coming. and suffering finds its way. I actually encouraged somebody about my age recently to read Ecclesiastes chapter 12, which talks about your grinders failing, which is a reference to your teeth falling out, and your and it's all sorts of secret language that has to do with the body just kind of coming apart. And it was funny because it wasn't a person in their 90s I was saying that to, which I've done that before too, and they look at me like, yeah, you think, you know, and but this was somebody, you know, a young person like in their 50s or something. But anyway, I was in my study, I've been impressed with a list of people that Jesus helped. The list defies a logical pattern, as you'll see when I mention just maybe five or six quick examples. And the list could be three or four times this long. To name a few, a despised tax collector. Jesus helped that person. And aren't you glad he did? His name's Matthew. And one of the four Gospels bears his name. Matthew. Jesus reached out to a guy that just most anybody in the religious community at that time said, are you kidding me? He's the enemy. A prominent religious leader, a Pharisee, John 3, his name's Zacchaeus, and or Nicodemus, and Nicodemus was not turned away by Jesus as some kind of dumb guy that didn't get it. After all, you've been to school, you should know better. Jesus said, here, let me explain some things to you. Then comes a criminal. Of course, you know the one on the cross. And then a government official. And I know you're tempted to put both of those in the same sentence, criminal and government. But anyway, there was a government official. He didn't make fun of him. He actually paid attention to his personal life. That story's in John 4. And then a blind beggar. Not much to offer in this life. He's blind and he's broke, which is why he's begging. Has no means to support himself in the day, and Jesus helped him. What a great story in Mark 10. There's, of course, the adulterous woman caught in the very act, we're told in John 8, and it's a story for the ages, and it's not made up. Jesus caring for somebody that no one else had any room for whatsoever. And a couple of more on my list. A homemaker. How many of them are forgotten? After all, they're just home. Caring for children and raising the next generation of humans. I mean, big deal. Jesus reached out to a homemaker. And then a group of children while we're thinking of stuff at home. Jesus didn't push them away, even though he was encouraged to do so. There were rich people and poor people on the list of people Jesus helped. There were powerful people and weak people. Sometimes we make Jesus out to be only interested in weak people, and I don't think that's true. There were powerful people that came along, and Jesus addressed them where they were. There were young people and old people. You can't just go for young people and ignore the old people. And Jesus shows that throughout his life. He cares about both groups of people. There were This will surprise you, but there were religious people and irreligious people that made the list of people that Jesus helped. What was his MO? Why, what were the ones that he helped? What did they have in common? Is a question that's been on my mind. And who did he ignore? We'll come up to some of those a little bit later. Was there a certain type of people that Jesus was drawn to? Those are kinds of lenses through which I've looked at this series called The Journey. So I just wanted to kind of help you know a little bit about that. And what's getting my attention is as well. who did Jesus reach out to or pause to interact with on the journey? Because he wasn't always on the go, though Mark might give you that impression, because he uses the word immediately almost every other word in his Gospels. And immediately you get the sense, can Jesus breathe? Can he? And in some cases, maybe not. But today we're going to meet a woman whose experience with Jesus reveals a special interest he seemed to have in suffering people. Indeed, the reason she stands out amongst a crowd of people is her very need. We do not learn her name at all. We only know about her need. She was a woman who suffered constantly from a bleeding issue, presumably a female issue, we might say in today's vernacular. Her story is told in Mark chapter 5, and I hope if you haven't turned there yet, you'll turn there now. Mark chapter 5. While you find your way there, I want to say a couple of things about suffering from a biblical, sort of biblical facts about suffering, and it's worth writing down. I've just got three or four, and I'll just mention them quickly as we move to this woman's story and her experience with Jesus. There was a German pastor and theologian, Helmut Thielicke, who once came to America and spent extensive time touring our country and meeting our people. He ran into, intentionally, what we would call Christ followers and wanted to learn about their lives and how they approached the God of this book. He was asked at the end of his tour, what would you describe as the greatest deficiency in the followers of Jesus that you've met along the way? And he was here for quite some time. And he said very succinctly, they have an inadequate view of suffering. Inadequate view of suffering. Those words were spoken by the theologian over 40 years ago. And I think in many ways, in my view, they're still true today. Some people will say of suffering, yeah, I'm just hard, down on my luck. That's some people's take on suffering. Man, bummer being you, you know, they're just sort of down on their luck. Some might go all the way out and say it's a karma issue going on. And there's a whole religion built up around that. Yeah, you were a bad girl or bad boy in a previous life. And this notion that you're paying for it now in a later life. There's systems of religion. That's a false religion. The Bible knows nothing of that, nor did Jesus. But there's a belief out there by some that that's why you suffer. Others just say in a generic sense, it's divine disapproval. God's ticked at you. Do you not get that? He's mad. Remember the bumper sticker? Jesus is coming back and he's ticked. That's my church word. The bumper sticker was worse. Some will actually quote Galatians 6:7. You know what? Don't be deceived. God's not mocked. For everyone that sows will also reap what they sow. So we actually have Bible verses that sort of make a sweeping, albeit not very compassionate, appraisal when it comes to suffering. But one's view of suffering, let's be honest now, let's just take this right to where you and I live, becomes altogether personal when we are the ones suffering. And there's no sign of relief. It's not long before you start to align yourself with biblical figures. Habakkuk, the prophet. Why him? Because he asked No other prophet asked these two questions. How long, God? He was a standout prophet for that reason. He asked God questions for the people. How long, God? And then his second question, why? He's talking about the Chaldeans and the terrible thing that was going on at the time. And those two questions, how long and why? Maybe you're there right now because this suffering commentary I'm giving right now is about you or somebody you love. How long and why? Or maybe you go a step further and you line yourself up with someone that's known as the weeping prophet. You heard of that name? His name's Jeremiah, and he wrote the book bearing his name and Lamentation right after. And it was Jeremiah who said this. Check out these words. The thought of my suffering and homelessness. Did you know that about him? My homelessness is bitter beyond words. I will never forget this awful time as I grieve over my loss. How long did that last? 40 years. Never any relief till the end. And what he talked about came true. The captivity followed shortly after. And you cannot talk like I'm talking without referencing Job, right? We think of the one that in the first chapter, naked I came and naked I will return. That's pretty bone simple. He breaks it down to the bare minimum. You may be stuck in your suffering this morning wondering similar questions. Where are you in this, God? And maybe more personally, how can I survive this? So to help you get a more adequate view of suffering, here's a couple of biblical facts. The first, would you write this down? When you suffer unjustly, remember Jesus. Because there will be times when it's unjust. So when you suffer, when I suffer unjustly, remember Jesus. These are astounding words, and I want you to see them in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20 reads, if you suffer for doing good, that means unjustly. Because if you do good and suffer, that's not right, right? That doesn't make sense. So if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example to follow in his steps. Imagine that, called. Do you see those words there? Called to suffer. You're writing other words down. That's an important. You're called to suffer. It's not accidental. You're called to suffer. You're following in Christ's steps. And then see the second line there? It's commendable before God. That means God is saluting you when you suffer unjustly. Peter would go on to say in chapter 4 this, when you suffer, dear friends, don't be surprised at the fiery ordeal that's come upon you to test you. How many times does that describe me? Why me? Can't believe this. I was walking well. I'm on a roll. Things are going good. He's saying, don't be surprised at that fiery ordeal that comes on you to test you as though some strange thing were happening to you, but rejoice in as much as you participate in the sufferings of Christ so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. The word so that, those two words are a hina clause in the Greek, which means it's a purpose statement that follows. It means everything that was just said about suffering is so that you may be one day overjoyed when Jesus is revealed. Isn't that great? So whatever you're going through right now, there will be great joy someday because of it. Okay, second principle, biblical facts about suffering. Suffering raises many questions, does it not? Comma, and some are never answered. Suffering, when you go through it or somebody you love, raises many questions. You write that one down, it's really good. It's okay to question. And some of them are never answered. Look no further than Job, the well-known sufferer, standout sufferer in the Bible. He lost all his wealth, he lost his family, and he lost his health. Please don't make that academic. Did you hear what I just said? He lost his wealth, everything. land, livestock, everything, gone. He lost his family. That gets real personal. And then he loses his health in the second chapter. That's all done by the second chapter. And then 36 chapters of silence from heaven. I don't know how much time. I have looked and looked, and I have no idea how long that span covered. But just read it, and you'll go, wow, imagine a guy just suffering, barely taking in a breath by chapter 2, and he waits till chapter 36 in silence. And even then, no real answers. Finally, in the 42nd chapter, the last chapter of his book, as a sort of resigned embrace of mystery that he has endured such suffering, Job admits this: "Now I know that you can do all things, and no plan of yours can be thwarted." Verse 2, but look at verse 3. "You ask," that's Job saying, "God, you ask, who is this that obscures my plans without knowledge?" There was all kinds of speculation for 36 chapters. Who is this that dares to ask me questions, is what God said when he broke the silence earlier. And then Job says, "Surely I've spoken of things I do not understand, things too wonderful for me to know." So, suffering may come and stay and have very few answers, if any. Here's a third principle. Jesus dispelled the belief that suffering is something people deserve. In John chapter 9, Jesus dispelled the belief that you're getting what you deserve. That may apply in some cases, but it's definitely not universally true. Enter the story in John chapter 9 of the man who is blind, and the disciples asked, "So is it him or was it his family?" Check out Jesus' response in John chapter 9. "Neither this man nor his parents sin, but there's a bigger or deeper or other reason why he's blind. He was born that way. It was so that you could see something that you don't see right now." That's my paraphrase of, this happens so that the works of God might be seen in this person's life, persevering this time of suffering. The truth is that sometimes people suffer, who suffer don't deserve it. And that raises a fourth point. Then why? Jesus had lots to say about why. And James helps us probably with words that most of us have memorized. "Consider it pure joy," he says, "when you encounter various trials." Okay, look at the next slide, Cliff. James chapter 1. "Consider it pure joy when you encounter, when you go through trials of many kinds." And then he says, "Because you know that the testing of your faith is doing something deep in you. It's producing perseverance. Don't give up on it." That's what "let perseverance do its work." That's what that means. Don't look for an exit, which is what I do. Maybe you too. Don't do that. Let perseverance finish the work that it's doing in you, so that you may be mature and complete. Hey, I like the look of that in my life or anybody's life, right? I want to be mature and complete, and I want to lack nothing. I want that outcome. And God says, stay under suffering. Allow it to continue, so that you may be perfect, complete. Notice lacking in nothing, what it turns into. And there might be one thing you lack. In fact, it's pretty likely one thing you will not quite have in abundance, and that is the wisdom to know what you're going through. So if you do lack wisdom in those moments, you should ask God, and he will generously give it to you without finding fault. So when we suffer, wisdom is necessary to help make sense out of our suffering. That brings us to this woman. I'm going to speculate that she, after suffering as long as she did that we'll read about, she probably wondered why Why me? Why this woman? I wondered that when I read the story. Why her? What did she do to deserve this? Was there something that could be done for this woman? Anything? Even if those were her questions, by the way, she doesn't, I don't detect, she doesn't, you don't find this woman as we read her story angry. Sad, yeah. I think she was sad. Reasonable to say she might have been near the end of hope. Possibly. That's reading a little bit into it. But she had heard about somebody. And he had helped other unhelpables. Would you write that word down? It's not in the dictionary, but it's a great word. Okay? She had heard about Jesus. And she had heard that earlier in chapter 5 of Mark, she had heard that there was this unrestrainable demoniac. He was absolutely unrestrainable. And Jesus helped him. Over in the city of the Gerasenes, it's across the lake, she would have pointed. I know, we heard all about that. And no one could help this man, but Jesus helped him. And she probably heard of another unhelpable. It would be the widow's son who died. He didn't stay dead. This Jesus, he helped the demoniac, this unrestrainable demoniac, to be as normal as any of us. And this widow's son was dead, and now he's alive. Matthew tells in Matthew 11. And then something that just moves all of us when there was a paralyzed man. Two of my neighbors are in wheelchairs. One from polio, was very young, and a long time ago, and the other from a skiing accident. And it just hits me hard. There was a man like that. And it hit Jesus hard. And Mark 2 tells us that he healed the man. This lady knew about those stories, those other unhelpables. Maybe he could just help her too. Maybe today. So Jesus, we enter the story, has accepted a desperate plea from a synagogue official. That's his formal title. He's a dad. This guy's a dad. Jesus again crosses. He went from the Gerasenes, and that unrestrained demoniac is now sitting around a fire having s'mores. He's okay now, right? And they cross the lake, and they get over to the other side, Capernaum, up to the north and west side of Lake Galilee. And Jesus had crossed the lake in the boat, and a large crowd, look at the story, verse 21, a large crowd gathers around him while he's by the lake. And one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus, it's close to my camp name at Tadmore, I was Jairo. So anyway, Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he just, would you read this the way I think it rolls? He collapsed. He was that desperate. I'm an official. I know what I'm doing. I'm in charge. And he collapses, falls at his feet, pleads earnestly with Jesus. No decorum here. None. My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. That's his simple plea. We've had a daughter over the years that's had a couple of big challenges physically. And I remember a man that touched my heart deeply. Came to the hospital before she went into surgery. And he says, "You're a pastor. You're here all the time with people in this situation. Today you're a dad. Be a dad." And love that man. This is a man who's a big deal, synagogue leader. But today he's a dad. And all he could say is, "Please come and put your hand on my daughter so that she'll be healed and live." That's all we're going to hear about that story. You can read the rest after verse 34. But Jesus and the dad, Jairus, hastily make their way toward the ailing daughter. And Mark then describes this unnamed woman. So Jesus went with him, and a large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. Is that just the worst sentence you could read? And you've lived it. Lots of you have. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought to herself, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. And immediately her bleeding stopped, and she fell at his feet, and she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him, and he turned around quickly in the crowd and asked, who was it that touched my clothes? You see the people crowded against you, his disciples answered. Yet you can ask, who touched me? Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. And then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet as well, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Suffering is over. We have just read a powerful description by Mark of a woman who suffered chronically for more than 12 years. My brother suffered a lot of years, 14 years before he left this life. I could start to tell you names and details of lots of people that whose stories relate to this woman. Another translation says constant bleeding. Man. She had sought medical help, as any of us would, only in her case found no cure. It left her broke, and verse 26 says, there's a spirit of deep disillusionment when your condition only gets worse. That's this woman. As difficult as her physical condition was for 12 years, the emotional stigma and shame were crippling to her. Socially and spiritually, she was ostracized. That was the practice of the day, unbelievably, but it was true. She was on par with a leper, seen by most as unclean. You got a problem, and that's something we stay away from. So, in the process, she's forbidden fellowship. You can imagine that. That's why I say the suffering was one thing physically, but it turns into altogether something even worse, socially and spiritually. She was shunned. Her world had become a wilderness. Deprived probably for most of the last 12 years of human touch. I can't imagine. I've touched 20 of you this morning. Dr. Paul Brand, a leprosy specialist, told a very moving story to Philip Yancey, my favorite author, about his experience of treating a young man with leprosy in India. Quote, in the course of the examination, Brand laid his hand on the patient's shoulder and informed him through a translator of the treatment that lay ahead. To his surprise, the man began to shake with muffled sobs. Have I said something wrong? Brand asked his translator. She quizzed the patient in a spurt of Tamil and reported, no doctor, he says he's crying because you put your hand on his shoulder. And until he came here, no one has touched him for very many years. Because we stay away from people like that. They did in this day. This woman with a bold reach of faith experiences the power of Jesus as an immediate rush, we're told, races this rush of healing through her body, verses 29 and 30. I want to point out an observation that's not just made once, but two times. Would you look back at verse 24? It's about the crowd, this observation. A large crowd, we're told in verse 24, followed, and look at the word pressed against him. Okay, that's what it means. Up again, the bodies are touching. That's not the only time it appears. Look down at verse 31. You see the people, because Jesus had asked in verse 30, who touched my clothes? You see the people crowding against you. There's the word again. It's this idea of a crowd that's pressed against Jesus. Yet she stood out. And we're told he felt her touch, not on his body, on a garment he wore. And her faith is rewarded. I don't want you to miss a final verse that was a beautiful and brand new insight that came to me as I studied this deeply this week. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." He calls her daughter. Up to this point in the story, she's been known as the woman or woman. But in this moment, and by the way, those are words that are descriptive words. She is the woman with this issue. She is a woman. That was fairly evident. That's a description. But daughter changes everything. It introduces relationship. By the way, it's the only recorded time that Jesus referred to a woman as daughter in all four Gospels. There is a change that we're supposed to understand in introducing that word. A relationship in this moment had begun with Jesus. For sure, we're told in the same sentence that her faith had healed her. By the way, the word healed here is from a Greek word that's very closely connected to saved. It's a soteriology word, a salvation word. So her faith had saved her. This bigger word than physical is what the Bible is trying to tell us. The touch that turned her from the woman to daughter was a touch that went more than physical. It went way past that to a spiritual realignment took place on this moment, on this day, for this person. Salvation had come to her. And then you can't miss this word, this expression, go in peace. Do you see Jesus' expression? Three words, go in peace. He's referring to the Jewish concept of shalom. Not just go in peace. Hey, be along your way. Have a happy day. Enjoy, you know, a future without this issue any longer. It's deeper than that. It's more go into peace is what Jesus is referring to. Go into wholeness spiritually, emotionally, and physically. See why I'm captured by stuff like this. Jesus cares, y'all. Had you pray about people, yourself and others, who suffer. Cares about suffering people. And his care recognizes that their suffering is likely beyond the physical. And you know that to be true, don't you? That's why pastors and other people that care go to hospitals. Because they're in the right place for the physical touch. A surgery, a procedure, a medicine. That's the right place to go. I'm so grateful for the great hospitals and doctors and nurses and medicines that we have. So why do I show up? Because they're doing all that work. Because their heart's hurting too, that's why. Because suffering doesn't sort of get corralled into the physical column, it's bigger and broader than that. And it certainly was for this woman. It involved the emotional and spiritual dimension of her life as well. This suffering woman had become a daughter of the king. She had become a sister in the family of God. Is that a great label of someone that was excluded up to this moment? He had been healed and made whole. And I know the one that did it, and so do you. I'd like you to bow with me as we talk to him and prepare to gather at a table with him. Through this woman's suffering, Lord, I pray that you would help us to have a better and a bigger view of suffering. You did so much more. Boy, it was huge to see this woman's physical issue fixed. But wow, what a story that extends way beyond that. I pray that you would help us to have a better view of suffering. That our instinct wouldn't be to just resist it and resent it, but to see it as something that you're doing in our hearts, our bodies, our souls. Help us to actually see that suffering may be a stage that you're using to work deep things that in our lives that go beyond physical healing. And help us, as we discover that, to allow you to do that work, God. To let it continue until whatever you're bringing about is accomplished. And then I pray, God, for help when it comes to seeing people that are suffering. I know my neighbors. I know their names. I've known them for many years. But I know my other neighbors are hurting too. They're just not bedbound. And every one of us can point to people like that in our families. So help us to have eyes to see and a heart that is sensitive to people around us suffering. And help us to come alongside and say, let me trust God for you right now. Let me help you. And in doing so, to point them to the one that can do the real healing. We come to communion right now, God, thankful for the bread and the cup, which are powerful reminders of what you did, Jesus. To gain the title, a man familiar with suffering. And so as we take the bread and cup this morning and hold it in our hands, remind us of your suffering and that it was accomplished by you to accomplish much in us to heal us.